Hey everybody, welcome back to Beyond AIO from Odyssey Geek. I am so excited today to be recording once again with my good friend Michael. How are you doing, Michael?
Hi! I'm tired, but doing okay though. How are you doing, Austin?
Doing well, and you got good reason to be tired because there's a super, super interesting interview that I'm really excited to hear on your Return to Gilead podcast.
Yeah, I had no idea when this is going to be released, but we're recording this right now in the middle of the first finale, like big finale of Return to Gilead. We're going to have three of these every four seasons, and the editing behind it has been bonkers. So I'm going straight from editing an interview to here, and then after this, I'm going to have to go back and edit more. So like, it's going to be a long night, but it's okay. We're doing all right.
All right. So before we get started, I want to go ahead and share some feedback that I've gotten from listeners about Beyond AIO.
Hey!
And I just want to say, I am so, so sorry, people. I have not responded to these a lot sooner. I have not been signed into my Google account for Odyssey Geek in quite a while. At the time of this recording, I think it was like a week or so ago, I logged into it. I saw several emails from people, which is great. Thank you so much. So I'm getting to it now. And since some of these emails were about Beyond AIO, I wanted to share on the podcast here with Michael.
How dare you not read the emails right away, Austin? Come on. No, it's fine. I'm glad we're reading these. Let's go.
All right, so the first one is from Juliana.
Hi!
And some of these emails, I'm going to be leaving some stuff out just for, you know, privacy purposes. All right, so this is from Juliana. She says, "Hello there, my name is Juliana. I recently found your podcast while searching for the Paws and Tails podcast and couldn't find that one."
No. Well, that's fine.
Well, in case you weren't aware, Michael, the podcast is like the Paws and Tails episode released on a weekly basis.
Right, right.
They call it the podcast.
Yeah, I saw
great
that.
Great pun there, right?
It's a little convoluted, but yes, I get it.
Anyway, back to the email. She says, "Your reviews on the Paws and Tails episodes and even the Odyssey ones are amazing. I don't listen to episodes much on headphones, so I miss some of the things that you mentioned. Even though Paws and Tails doesn't make episodes anymore, the reviews are wonderful. Hope you're all doing well." Well, thank you, Julianne. That was such a great, encouraging email. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. I often forget that we do these because I don't produce them and they're so few and far between. But I'm really glad there are people who are enjoying them. So yeah, thanks for sending in feedback.
All right. And next one is from Jeremy L., who has emailed me on past occasions about Odyssey Geek.
Nice.
And this one is about Beyond AIO. He says, "Hi, Austin. I just wanted to email and say I love the last podcast from you and Michael," which when I got this email, I think it came out after our review of The Lighthouse and A Race Against Time, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And he says, "I really think you two make a great team. I thought the last two episodes of Paws and Tails were good, but I agree with you, they didn't really set up anything in the series. They're good episodes to listen to, though. I'm really looking forward to listening to your next review. Sincerely, your little fan and little listener, Jeremy L."
Thanks, man.
Well, thank you, Jeremy.
Well, I mean, I guess we gotta start doing more projects together, right, Austin? If we make a good team, I'd be down for that.
Yeah, I need to log into my email a lot more.
If you give me the credentials for your email, I'll take care of the feedback. I love feedback.
Well, I gotta be careful because I know one email that we got a while back about this podcast, I think, had kind of a spoiler for the Paws and Tails series, so I don't think that'd be a good idea for that. Only one of a myriad of reasons.
That's right, I am going into this blind. Okay, anyway.
All right, so we're done with the feedback. Again, thank you all so much. If you enjoy this podcast, please let us know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's go to the review. This is our review of episode 17, A Conscious Effort, and then we'll be reviewing episode 18, Tiffany Cometh. So the first one, A Conscious Effort, it's written by Phil Lawler, directed by David Carl, music by Tim Hosman, sound design by Jerry Swofford, and the song Tell It Like It Is was written by Sandy Howe and Matt McGuire.
Yeah, so right off the bat, had we reviewed a Phil Lawler episode before, besides the Easter episode?
I don't believe so. I think this is his first episode release schedule-wise for Paws and Tails.
Right, okay, so I was listening to this, and I was halfway through, and I think even at the beginning, I thought, this sounds a lot like Into Temptation.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got partway through, I was like, maybe this was written by Phil Lawler. I'm like, no, he probably just had a hand in helping with it because he was script supervisor. I get to the end, and it says, written by Phil Lawler. I thought, what? That's surprising. But I liked it. I thought both these episodes were pretty good, actually.
Well, good. I wasn't sure about one of the episodes, but yeah, we'll get to it. And at the beginning here, I want to read a little bit from the director's notes for this episode, but it's kind of funny.
Go for it.
"First off, I will dispel the rumors. Don't go looking in your local toy store for a hurdy-gurdy. There is no such thing."
No!
When Phil Lawler turned the script, the sound designers began doing research to find out what kind of music a hurdy-gurdy makes. They couldn't find anything. When we asked Phil about it, he simply said, I made it up. Creative types, what are you going to do? End of quote.
Man, Phil, come on. Why you got to be such a freelance writer? Get in there. Tell your sound designers what you need to do. I don't know. It's fine.
It's fun. Like, it's, you know, it sounds like it's a real thing. And, you know, it's, you know, two words that rhyme. I found it really imaginative. I think the sound designers had really, well, I guess, yeah, the sound designer was Jerry Swofford in this. I love the choice of, we come from the theme music, we hear a little bit of, you know, intro music to the episode, and then it starts with the sound effects at the top. I love that.
Right, and it builds the anticipation throughout the entire episode of, okay, get used to the song, because by the time Papa Chuck sings it, which is why I think this is more of a director choice, it could be a sound design choice, but they had to get Papa Chuck's actor to record that. So, who did David Carl direct this episode?
Yes, he did.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, so to have the, it was the,
yeah, Do Your Ears Hang Low.
Yeah, it's a fun song. There's a, there's an ice cream truck that goes around our neighborhood in the summer that plays that song, so I'm very used to it. But, yeah, it really well sets the mood of, okay, here's the song, here's the theme for the episode. I love leitmotifs. You know I love leitmotifs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I loved it. It was great.
That should be on your t-shirt.
I stand Timmy and leitmotifs.
Forget the Timmy t-shirt. Just go with the leitmotifs. Keep calm and listen to leitmotifs.
It's too convoluted anyway.
But yeah, we hear the top. We hear the narrator talking about this top. There's certain keys on it, and when you spin a certain way, it plays a tune. It doesn't play a touching little melody, but it still plays a tune.
No.
But I like this. It's different. We hear the narrator usually doesn't interrupt the flow of the dialogue that much. Usually it's at the beginning and end of a scene. But I think it's kind of cool how it intercuts with, you know, the dialogue and the narrator kind of is saying, oh, he's been waiting patiently or something like that. And him, it's switching back and forth. It's not always done like this in Paws and Tails, but I think it was kind of a neat, unique way to get this set up.
Yeah, I can imagine Phil always doing all the script supervision, and he's just like, guys, have the narrator interact more with the characters, and then he finally gets to write an episode, he's like, alright, I'm doing it. It's a really fun addition, I liked it.
So CJ wants to play with it, I guess, yeah, they're at the fortress, and Stacy said that she was going to let him play with it, and then she finds out that it's really late, she has to go to her paper route. Yeah,
conveniently, she finds out.
CJ begs her to still play with it, she reluctantly lets him do it. And that was a bad idea.
It was a good idea to let him play with it. It because he had been waiting for a long time, and he was kind of getting bossy about, hey, you need to give that to me. And she was also not being great about it. I think most of the characters, except, I mean, Goose is fine. I think the two characters we see here, Stacy and CJ, both have their own faults. And I could see the plot going that direction. I was like, CJ, just play with the top. Don't go crazy with it, and you'll be fine. We won't have an episode, though, so it was interesting to see the slow devolving.
Yeah, five-minute episode.
Yeah. Nothing happens. Great.
So he spins it too fast. It goes out the door and falls over Fortress Rock, which I'm not sure. The sound of that falling, I don't think it was supposed to be a sound effect. It was almost like a noise, like almost a musical noise, maybe?
Yeah.
But I think it was maybe a little bit too dramatic.
I don't know. I liked it.
I think it kind of took me out of it for a little bit.
I think with the humor of the scene and me thinking, nope, that's going to happen. Something's going to happen. Ah, there it is. That happened. It added to the humor. I think my thing about the sound design is that whenever I hear the top, I imagine like a 5-gallon bucket and a marble rolling around in that bucket. It's just too big for me to visualize a top. If I think of a top, I think of something small that's spinning. I'm not thinking of this big cylinder. So, and the sound effects, furthermore, sound like they're far off in the distance, a little bit hard to make out. But that's just something in Paws and Tails, generally, that I'm like, the sound effects don't always match where I think they should be placed on headphones. I still get the idea. Or, like, even in the car, which is where I was listening to this one. I still get the idea. It's fine. I thought it was done well. And a lot of it comes down to the writing rather than the sound design. I think the writing of that, of describing the top spinning around and hitting things and then falling, I think that was done well.
Well, actually, I like the sound design quite a bit for, like, the top, because okay. There's, like, three or four different elements for that. You have that click, 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 click sound, like the, like, a spinning thing, and then, like, the clicking a little bit. Like, there are some toy tops that are fairly big, and if it has the capability to play music, I would assume it'd be pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Well, You know, like, music boxes are pretty small, and that's what I imagine the little things are on this, unless it is bigger.
Well, a music box is a lot less sturdy than a top.
Good point. Okay. I see what you mean. Maybe it was just... Because Phil Lawler made it up, it's a little hard for me to visualize what's going on here. But anyway, continue.
It's a really cool imagination, cool imagining. Which, speaking of imagination, after CJ breaks it, his conscience, or you could say like an angel and a devil on his shoulder, Papa Chuck is his conscience. I'm going to keep messing this up. Papa Chuck is his conscience. Why can't I say that word?
Put this at the end.
Conscience. There we go. He's his conscience. I say that 5 times really fast. Conscience, conscience, conscience. Okay, I'll stop.
No, you can't do it. Conscience, conscience, conscience.
Yeah. Anyway, Papa Chuck's the good guy. And we hear he's back.
Timothy Owl. Okay, so I don't have a huge problem with it because it's in his head. And I can understand why CJ would be thinking about it. It's not a problem with this episode. Just reminds me why I feel like, what's his name? The guy from the Snake Oil episode. Theron. Dr. Theron. Dr. Theron was such a good bad guy because he comes in, he's got his agenda, CJ is just a part of that. Whereas Timothy Owl seems to only exist to haunt CJ. And so I think I would have even liked it more if Timothy Owl was there in person, because we've seen that in a previous episode. For him to be in his head, it's also fine. It just reminds me how the strange existence of Timothy Owl. And combine that with the fact that it sounds like he's like covering up Papa Chuck's mouth in CJ's head. Like, yeah. No, don't say that. I'm trying to figure out how that plays into CJ's conscience.
Yeah.
Because maybe CJ is just drifting toward that anyway, and Papa Chuck is trying to bring it up, but CJ is the one covering it up. Because I think as far as consciences go, we have the Holy Spirit with us if we believe. And you can argue about the influence of Satan or his devils or his demons in I think Odyssey especially is a great place to talk about that, with can a Christian be tempted in that way? I think the answer is still yes, but to understand exactly how, I don't think that the evil would be overpowering the good influence.
God will always provide a way of escape.
Right, so, and granted, his conscience, these two voices aren't doing anything to force him to do something, so I'm thinking this is more of just, in his head, he's creating the dialogue between these two people. Like, what would Papa Chuck say? But what would Timothy Owl say? And I don't mind that. It's just a little unclear.
Kind of like a Leonid Stepanov kind of thing.
Not exactly, but anyway. I would say Leonid Stepanov is a lot more insidious, but continue.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like Into Temptation from Odyssey, like, you know, we have Wit as Jimmy's conscience. We don't hear anybody else. Like, we don't hear, like, the devil on his shoulder. Which is, I love that line where, like, Mr. Whitaker says, like, yeah, you do pretty well on your own or something like that.
You don't need a bad guy. And Phil always in this episode is like, nah, I'm going to give him a bad guy.
But yeah, it'd be interesting if this episode came before The Lighthouse, because I know in that one you thought that Timothy Owl didn't actually exist, like he was like being like a spiritual force or CJ's imagination. So it's interesting that after that episode we have this one, which I've already told you, he is real, he's an actual animal like the rest of them.
Yeah. And now we actually get it where he's in his imagination, so yeah,
yep.
I'm fine, it's okay.
I don't think this is as much of a spoiler. I told you he'd show up at least one more time, and he will appear in the future in real life.
I don't hate that. I just want to know what the context is. I guess we'll find out. I'll find out.
The next episode you hear him in, you're going to learn a little bit more about why Timothy Owl does the things he does, if I remember right.
Oh.
So, yeah. So,
can I get a Timothy Owl spinoff series for this audio drama?
No.
Okay.
They can't even finish the entire series for Balls and Tails. No spinoffs.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, so CJ does the wrong thing. He hides it in a hole. He tells Stacy that it was stolen. And of course, Stacy's disappointed.
Yeah, this is funny because I've been recently working through VeggieTales, and I watched the Fibber Matter Space just a couple days ago. And this reminds me of Junior Asparagus trying to figure out a reason why his dad's plate is broken, and you can see in his face, like, no, it didn't happen that way, it happened this way, the aliens broke it, and it's just totally not believable. And for CJ, I'm surprised that Stacy doesn't pick up on it, that he's making up a falsehood, especially if she knows him really well. But that leads me to think, like, either it's just for the writing, we're supposed to accept that he's a good liar, or that she really does trust him to the point of where she knows he wouldn't lie, which is kind of sad for their relationship that he would do that.
It is, you know? It is. And, I mean, he does give a believable story, kind of like The Tangled Web.
Yeah, I was going to reference that one, too.
Yeah, and I'm thinking maybe CJ didn't think it through, because Stacey says, I'd suspect Hugh if he wasn't out of town. And I'm thinking, like, CJ's voice inflections after that sound like, oh, yeah, like, I could have pinned that on him. Maybe. You kind of pick up that context there.
Yeah, I thought that was good writing.
But she's not, you know, over the top about it. CJ goes to bed and has a nightmare about a giant top chasing him. Which, we don't get a whole lot of sound effects with that, just a, you know, really creepy voice.
It's me. It's the hurdy-gurdy top. Are you going to eat me? No, I'll swallow you whole. Wait, that's not the right quote. Anyway.
I was actually kind of thinking of Tongzilla, the Kids Corner episode, which I know Phil Lawler wrote in that series. I'm not sure if he wrote that episode or not.
Man, I have so much audio drama to catch up on.
Well, Kids Corner has a lot more episodes than Paws and Tails, so Dibbly. Like 200 plus episodes.
Oh,
so,
buddy, no, yeah. No. Okay. I have enough with Gilead, please.
Uh-huh. So I love the structure of this story. I love the humor of it, too, because CJ tries his best to put it out of his mind about the hurdy-gurdy top, anything about it, about what he did. So he goes to school, supposed to pick up an apple for his lunch.
Steve Bridges.
Yep, Steve Bridges again. He suggests music to CJ because he said didn't sleep well.
Yeah. Wait, can you imagine CJ going to sleep with a hurdy-gurdy top just spinning next to him? I think that'd get pretty annoying. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, especially in his state of mind.
Yeah. Oh, boy. He wakes up. It's just like there. He's like, ah! can't get away from it.
Kind of like the Lucky Penny.
Oh, boy. That's a good episode. That's a really good episode. Nice job.
Oh, thanks. So I noticed something about this. I don't know if you noticed this, but back in, oh, what was it called? A Closer Look.
Yes.
We have that scene where the kids run out when Mr. Crawford's talking and closes the door. He doesn't say anything after them, but he does in this one. They're like, what about your, the door closes as apple, which is great. That's how that scene should have ended. Like, they should, because that scene we talked about, it felt kind of odd because Mr. Crawford just says nothing when they leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was, and again, I love, you know, I mean, for all of the stuff I've talked about with recent writing with Phil, he's a great writer.
Yep.
And I love how he wrote for this episode and these early episodes of Paws and Tails, because he knows what good humor is and humor that actually fits the scenario. It's not just random characters saying stuff. I could also apply this to New Odyssey, like with even the episodes that are coming out lately, and people know what those episodes are. It feels like a lot of the humor is Kathy Buchanan's signature style of humor, which it's okay, but it's a lot of just characters have an option where they can say a string of three jokes at the same time, and so they say three jokes at the same time. Whereas with Phil's, it's a lot more situational. Same thing with some of the other writers on Odyssey. So with Phil's here, I love how the whole setup is really funny, how there are hurdy-gurdy tops everywhere. Well, spoilers, I guess, for the rest of the episode. But yeah, and in this one, it really plays off of Mr. Crawford's character, that he's like, hey, I'm just doing my job here. You want a top? And CJ's like, no, and runs out. He's like, wait, but what about your apple? It's great.
Oh, okay. I guess I'll just play with the top myself.
Oh, that's not the right one. Okay.
So CJ runs to school. I guess he gets here kind of early. And we get to hear Miss Harbor again.
Yay! We also get to hear in the next episode.
Yeah. But which, did you notice? I didn't notice this. I think I noticed it when I was getting ready for this review. Her name is not mentioned.
She. Yeah, that was really annoying.
Yeah, he says, like, you know, yes, ma'am. And I think the narrator says, like, the teacher or the class starter or whatever. We don't hear her name, which, if you've heard the earlier episodes, you know who it is. It's the same actress. But for someone that never heard any of the other episodes, if you just listen to this episode, you may not think that the teacher is real important. But since she is a major minor character in the series, you think it'd be pretty important to at least drop her name in there at least once.
I mean, it's Phil's episode. Maybe he just wrote a teacher in there and didn't know who it was, and because he's got a lot to keep track of with between this and Odyssey and stuff. But, I could be wrong, but I thought when I first heard the scene, it says he got to school, the kids got there, but then when she started talking, I'm like, wait a minute, did you even indicate the teacher is the she you're talking about? Maybe I'm wrong there, and the script did have the teacher in there.
I think the sound effects and mixing there wasn't the greatest. Like, it didn't seem like a really smooth transition. It seemed kind of abrupt. The way he got there was quiet, and then I think the...
Yeah, I heard that too.
Maybe it's like a musicless transition to a next scene.
Crossfade. Yeah. I don't know. If somebody wants to go back and double check that, let me know. Send us an email about it.
So she's given to teach science, and she gets CJ to explain what a top does, and then he finds out, and he's realized, like, no, please, no. And then she brings it out.
I actually understood the full definition of centrifugal force. I was thinking whether it was centrifugal or centripetal.
You're an engineer, would.
I am. The only word I didn't understand was curvilinear, and that seemed redundant. It's just circular is the word you need right there.
But is it a word?
I don't know. I didn't get a chance to look it up. But it basically, the definition is correct. It's apparent force pushing outward from the center axis, which is what she says. And then as soon as she describes it in layman's terms, he goes, wait. And she's like, and to demonstrate, we're good. He's like, no.
Yeah, that's really fun.
Big fan.
And he can't go anywhere. He can't, and this is a small school. He can't get a hall pass or anything like that.
As we find out in the next scene, it's even worse.
Yeah, he goes outside for recess, and all the kids are playing with hurdy-gurdy tops.
It's so funny. It's really good.
Yeah, it reminds me of an episode. I'm not sure if you've heard any of the old-time radio show, R. Miss Brooks.
No, I haven't heard any old-time radio.
So it's actually about a school teacher, and it's probably the funniest old-time radio show ever. Like, every single episode, there's so many laugh-out-loud moments, and the actors are so great in it. But there's an episode, so Miss Brooks is a teacher. She's, you know, very dry, sarcastic personality, and there's a biology teacher there that she is in love with, but he is, like, a very shy, backward person, hardly knows how she feels about him.
Just tell the guy, come on. Okay, anyway, sorry.
That's okay. Well, one episode, she tries to, like, someone tells her, you know, just try forgetting about him. She goes about trying to forget, and all I think she goes to like a party or something later, and all these people she's seeing, even a baby, has Mr. Boynton's face, and is the actor that plays Mr. Boynton. And she's like reacting like, what? Like, you, like, it's a really funny episode.
That sounds really funny. Can you link that in the description of this podcast?
Yeah.
Yay. Okay.
Anyway, so CJ, like, did he finish school or did he leave during recess?
I don't think he skipped school, because that's not a, I might be wrong. I honestly don't remember, but I would think there'd be bigger problems if he skipped school. I don't remember Papa Chuck addressing that.
Yeah, I think he probably did. Like, I think maybe the narrator said, like, you know, as soon as the school let out, he left as fast as he could or something like that.
Went to the one place where he thought he was safe, Papa Chuck's workshop.
Mm-hmm. And he's humming that tune. And CJ just arrives like, ah, why are you doing that?
Before that, CJ gets there and he's harried. And Papa Chuck goes, are you all right? He's like, yeah, I just need something, anything to do. And he says, okay, well, you can plane that wood for me. Oh, sure, planing. I love the plane. And then Papa Chuck goes, and the CJ goes, ah! That's just the first six notes of the song, which is also really funny. And the audience, because we've heard it so many times, and also because in that recess scene, the sound design is great. Because regardless of what I think of the hurdy-gurdy top sound effects anyway, the sound, I already know what the song sounds like. I know what the sound from the top sounds like. And I didn't mention this back at the beginning, but when the narrator says the top is spinning and getting faster and slower and the sound is changing, I thought that was really good, really, really well represented, especially when it starts to spin out of control. But with the constant spinning, I think it's all the same, similar speeds, but in at recess, there's like three or four tracks layered on top of each other, but you get the implication that there are hundreds of these all over the courtyard or wherever he is. And it's really, really good. And then you just have the lone of Papa Chuck coming in is very, very funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It kind of puts you in CJ's shoes, as you're getting almost annoyed as this song as he is, but for a different reason.
Right, right.
So Stacy shows up and she says, I'm not gonna, you know, let whoever did this get away with it. And then I love how this scene ends. She, like, I think she opens the door or whatever, and then Goose walks in, probably with a trench coat on, so like, just call me Sherlock Goose.
Is this the first time that Goose has appeared this late in an episode? Because I was very pleasantly surprised by her being here.
I think so. This is like, what, the first, second commercial? I think it's like right before the second commercial break, I think.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, she's only like two or three scenes in this episode, but still.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
She's so good.
Okay, I know you like Goose a lot more than me, so I'm sure you have thoughts about this next scene.
Do you not like her in this scene?
I know, I like it. I just know that you like Goose more than a lot more than I do. Like, I like Goose a lot, but I know you're a big fan of Goose, so
yeah.
I'll let you take the lead on this scene if you wanted.
Well, I'll preview to the next scene. So in the next one, she's got a bit of a bigger role than she does in this one, and I think her character is a lot more better fleshed out in the next one. But I can briefly talk about Goose. So in this next scene, and I think it's the scene after that as well, she's playing detective work, and Stacy says something like, "There's nothing that Goose can't find," and Goose is like, "Right, where's my notebook?"
Yeah, nobody's better at finding things than me, and then follow with, "Where's my notebook?"
And then she spends the rest of the scene just looking for the notebook, and it's so funny.
I know. I've heard this episode. I haven't heard it as many times as I have other episodes, but I was listening to this episode, getting ready for the review. It took me a little bit, and I just laughed out loud. Like, I had heard that joke before, but it's so, so funny.
Yeah. So she's just rummaging around in the background while the other, I think it's Papa Chuck, is saying, like, well, and trying to talk to CJ about it, right? I mean, I don't remember the particulars of that scene.
Yeah, Papa Chuck suggests that they go to the scene of the crime, so they go there.
Well, Goose goes, "I don't usually take suggestions, but since I can't find my notebook, well, we'll do it."
And, you know, it's a good thing she didn't say she was on a caper, because caper. Then she would be the one that, yeah, still on the top.
Oh boy.
But yeah, she wasn't on a caper this time.
Good, yeah. I still can't get over the fact she was using that word correctly. That's really funny.
Yeah. So she pins it on a frou-frou bird, right, which may be made up, or, you know, this world is a little bit different than ours, so it might be a real thing. I doubt that's a real thing in real life.
Yeah, no, the bird that doesn't touch the ground. No, there are birds that don't fly, but not birds that don't touch the ground, as far as I know. Maybe there are. I'm willing to concede that maybe they're on, I just don't know about them.
The sounds of the great Putu.
Brah! Brah! No, that bird's just creepy. So, with Goose here, Goose actually serves the story in a really great way. She's not just noise. She directs the characters to go uncover the truth in a roundabout way, and she finds there's only one set of footprints, which is the clue to reveal that CJ is lying. But because Goose can't see that, and she doesn't want to see that, she's like, okay, the only other option is this bird, which is actually a very logical conclusion, because that is the only other option. She's playing by Sherlock's maxim of, when you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Also, Iliad House reference, Phil Lawler. It makes sense. So with her, she really works in this episode, because also we know what the truth is, and we can say, oh yeah, that's silly. And then, in the meantime, as Goose goes off, we don't care about it, because CJ reveals the truth. Because Papa Chuck knows, has put together the truth as well. It's not just a case of Goose is floundering around while Papa Chuck figures it out. It's that Goose actually does contribute, and I like that.
Mm-hmm. And like we've seen in the past and in future episodes, she's pretty wise, but she's easily distracted.
Yes.
She's a weasel.
All right, I'm done.
Yeah, we haven't had that for a while.
She's too busy bobbing and weaving.
Uh-huh. So, CJ does confess, and Stacy gets really angry. CJ, he's finally repentant, and you can hear that in his voice, I think. He asks her to forgive him. Papa Chuck's looking at the hurdy-gurdy top that CJ showed them. She's about ready to say, you know, that she's not going to forgive him or whatever, and then you hear that top running again, I think. I like Papa Chuck's line, you know, "I'm not sure I wanted to know or hear what you were going to say about CJ about forgiving him. Like, unless you said that you were going to forgive him." Not quite passive-aggressive, but, you know, a neat way to, like, turn about their words.
So, from a story structure standpoint, this isn't Stacy's story. It's CJ's story. But given the way that Stacy was acting at the beginning of the episode, and the fact that she has a really easy out to forgive CJ, I don't really like her arc, but I don't think I'm supposed to either. I feel like Stacy, if she was to be made a better character, she should have had her own realization of, I was also being selfish, I need to apologize for that, because otherwise I would have been there to watch it and help you not spin it out of control. But we don't even get that. Instead, she's about to not forgive him, and then when the top's fine, she's okay. But I would go even further than that, and something I've practiced at camp with some of my guys, camp is over, I was at a summer camp this summer. I don't think we didn't record at all.
I don't think so.
When was the last time we recorded, man? I don't remember.
Back in June, maybe, or May?
Okay. Well, that's not that bad. Anyway, one thing I practice with some of my guys at camp is that if somebody does you wrong, even if they don't say they're sorry, can you forgive them? Can you let go of it? Because that's important. you don't always have to, I don't think you always have to have the other person say they're sorry or they won't do it again or show they're repentant for you to forgive, because forgiveness is something that you do to release that person. So, like, sometimes forgiveness can help and like get an apology, because if somebody thinks that they're holding you by not saying they're sorry, like holding you captive, you saying I forgive you anyway shows that, like, I have no ill will towards you. I may even still want to be good friends with you, even if you don't apologize for that. And then reconciliation comes after that person has apologized and is ready to make amends. So I think there was potential for a really good extra point in here, but it was kind of lost, because not only didn't we get that in Papa Chuck's explanation, he more kind of said, like, CJ is sorry for what he did, so you should forgive him. And also, the top was fixed right away. So I think the story could have been reworked to allow for that. I'm okay if it's not, because it's not really Stacy's story anyway, but it would have been nice to, see.
Yeah, and it's not the main theme either. And even if they did it for a little bit, I don't think it'd be enough to be like a minor, like a secondary theme as much, because you wouldn't have much time to spend on it, which I think it's concise enough. It comes together enough.
Right.
Okay. And I think it works.
Your sin will find you out.
And I love the ending.
Can I play with your top? No.
And then, yeah, like, don't push it.
It's such a sinister line from her, the way she delivers it. Don't push it, CJ.
Yeah, and then you hear that tune again, and then it goes into the orchestration from Tim Hofman with that same music, and then it ends. Like, oh, that's just so good. That's such a great ending.
Yes. Now, that is, it's John Campbell in the next episode, right?
Yes.
Right, yeah, I could tell it was Tim Hofman in this first one. Yeah, really good ending.
So, speaking of music, we come to the song, Tell It Like It Is. What do you think of it?
I think it's okay. I like the synth used at the beginning, like with the piano keys. I don't know if that was Tim Hofman orchestrating that. Maybe it was.
I think it was.
Okay, yeah. It's a little bit different than the other songs that I think I would like even better. It's not as catchy. Seems like more of a, we needed a song for the end here, so, hey, let's make a song about telling the truth. It's fine, it works, just not exactly my cup of tea. It's still fun. Paws and Tails does a pretty good job with their songs.
Yeah, well, this one I felt was kind of lackluster, and it almost felt, I know it wasn't, but it felt like kind of rambly. I mean, maybe that's just the style of the song itself, but it also, like, the song itself, I don't know, it felt almost out of place, not with the style. I know it was, you know, it comes to, like, the moral of the story, I guess, is telling the truth, or not trying to, you know, cover things up,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, it works, but for some reason, it felt like almost didn't tie to the episode quite as well as I think it could have. Maybe just because I, you know, didn't care for the song a whole lot. I don't think it's a bad lyric-wise or, you know, a style that doesn't fit with the episode. It just felt like it just, meh. Like, the episode I thought was pretty good, actually, quite a bit good, but I just think the song was just kind of a downer a little bit.
Well, furthermore, something I missed at the end of the episode was when CJ asks, am I going to be punished? And Papa Chuck says, well, I mean, it sounds like it's the trope of, well, I think you've been punished enough for everything you went through. I get that. And I hope he's learned from it. And it seems like he has, because he's learned it himself. But when I think back on this episode, what was the theme? I mean, we see CJ being tormented by the hurdy-gurdy top. That's definitely a tie into the theme. The theme about telling the truth and not having that, like, not having it torment you, not having it burden you. He's the one who reveals it. It seems like the episode could have had a little bit more action as far as the conflict between CJ and Stacy. Maybe I'm just getting on the whole ending thing again with the top suddenly being fixed. But then to have the song afterward, it was okay. It kind of hammered home for me, this is the theme of the episode, whereas during the episode, I was more focused on the humor and throughout it. So maybe that's just me.
But overall, yeah, I think it's not the best. I think it's above average, but it has some really funny moments. I think it's a good story. It's not one I go back to listen to a whole lot, but as Phil Oller's first episode on the show, it's actually quite a bit better than some of the other writers for Paws and Tails that we've heard, the episodes that we've listened to so far.
I wouldn't expect anything less, although I didn't get any allusions to the fact that these are animals, except for the, what was it, bird at the end?
Yeah, that could be anything. Like, you don't have to be an animal to know about that bird. You could have been a human talking about that bird.
Well, I mean, what What I mean is, what I mean is I didn't get any, I don't think there were any defining traits of, like, CJ put his paws on this or something. It seemed like it could have been played out by people. And also, like, the next episode as well feels like that too. So, it seems like as we go along, the anthropomorphism of these animals into, like, the main characters of the story, I don't think it's as utilized as it could be in these stories. However, the stories are great, so I don't have a huge problem there. Just a little note.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's mentioned, sometimes it's not. In some cases, it's better that they don't mention as much, especially, like, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, Bible stories and that kind of stuff.
The Easter episode.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I have questions.
All right, so let's go to episode 18, Tiffany Cometh.
Yeah, Timothy Richter. No, Rockler, not Richter. Totally not Tiffany Richter. Yeah. Totally not the exact same, almost exact same scenario as Tiffany Richter's introduction, am I right?
Kind of.
So,
well, actually, let's go ahead and go through the credits first.
Okay, do it.
Okay. All right, so the writer is David Carl, which I think it's been a while since we've written an episode. I think the last few episodes we've reviewed haven't been written by him. It was also directed by him. Script supervisor was Phil Lawler, music by John Campbell. And here's kind of a goof. In the episode, it says sound design by Jerry Swofford, but on the CDs that I have, it has, like, the credits for that episode on there too. It says Eric Basil.
What?
So I'm assuming it's probably Jerry Swofford, and they probably just misprinted on the CD.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm not sure. Either one. I know they both work on the show, so I'm probably going with Jerry Swofford.
Jerry Swofford probably would have mastered the audio, too, so he would have seen that his name was wrong in there. So it's probably a CD thing. You're probably right about that.
Okay. And then the song, It Will Be Silly, written by Sandy Howe and Nick Brown.
Oh, so, Blues gets a solo! And a kazoo solo! Can we just go there first? Can we go with the song first, please?
Yeah, we can do that. We haven't done that before, so yeah, let's do it.
Okay, one of my favorite songs of the whole series, just because Goose, the whole time, and then Kazoo. And there's Goose on Kazoo. Wasn't that in the previous song, too?
Yeah, The Princess.
I know. Oh, man. Yeah, huge, huge fan. Especially considering Goose's role in this episode. She's not the main character, but she's extremely significant in anchoring the root of, or like the theme of the episode. So I loved that she sang this song. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And I like how, you know, talk about the birds and the fish. Like, you know, if you were a bird or if you were a fish, you know, it's kind of funny. It is an animal talking about that, but the puns are fun. Hearing her on the kazoo, which it sounds like it actually is her playing the kazoo. Like, you can kind of tell it's, you know, it's a female voice doing that, I think.
Kazoos are interesting.
Yeah, because you can hear people's, like, you know, not quite their voice, but their vocal tone, I guess, with a kazoo, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there are a couple of kazoo remixes that I've heard online where you can actually hear the person's voice through the kazoo when they're doing a cover of a song. So, yeah. I know what you mean.
I figure you probably would like, you know, Goose singing the solo.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't sure if you'd, what you think about, like, the lyrics and all that.
I thought the lyrics were fine. They were catchy. They were making me, when she said, when she got to the part about the bird, I was like, you used to say bird? Where are you going with this? And then the lyrics actually did follow.
Oh, frou frou.
We're back on that? Okay, fine. But no, they kept me engaged, and I liked the backup singers, too, in there. I think was that Sandy Howell singing in the background?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
No, I'm a fan.
Yeah, it's a fun song. Not my favorite, but Goose does make it really stand out. And yeah, it is kind of catchy. Kind of the lyrics, this chorus kind of sticks in your head. But I think she has a better song coming up, and it's in. Okay, this isn't a major spoiler. I'll just say it. She sings a song in one of the Christmas episodes coming up.
Yes. Yes. Very happy about that. Okay. All right. Well, we'll get there in 2 years. Great.
Hopefully, less than that. All right, so back to the beginning.
Okay, right.
So the first scene, we hear the narrator talking about Miss Harbor, and she's at the school. She's listening to the girls outside, which is, it's fun. You actually hear, you know, Marcia, Stacy, and Goose talking, which is a really fun conversation. A very, very, very polite or very encouraging conversation.
Yes, yes.
It's still very sweet.
And it's an excellent contrast to what we get later in the episode.
Yes.
I totally missed what actually this conversation was the first time I listened to the episode. And then the second time I was like, oh, that's what that is. Goose is being complimented on how great her hair is. And then later she's totally thrown under the bus for her hair.
Oh, I did not catch that.
You didn't catch that? Yeah, that's super significant. That's why I'm saying Goose is the central the character who exemplifies the theme really well, or is the anchor for the theme in this episode, because later on in that scene, I'll jump there and then we can come back. But when Tiffany is kind of encouraging everyone to gossip about each other and pick on each other, Goose is always saying, no, 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 stop it, even as everyone else jumps back and forth. And Goose becomes the brunt of a lot of their insults. So in the beginning here, to see that she's in the conversation and they are complimenting her hair, to see that turnaround later and see that she's the character who actually sticks to her guns on the whole thing, I loved it. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, while you're talking there, I was actually thinking, yeah, this is a kind of a contrast to how they're acting later, because it shows how much Tiffany is changing their friendship and the way they act.
Exactly.
I wasn't thinking about the hair thing, but yeah, that makes sense too. That's good.
And it's also good foreshadowing, because we see Ms. Harbor watching, and it's not a bad talking to herself line, but when she says, I love my job, I think is what she says, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. It's great, because foreshadowing what'll happen later, even like what if she loves her job, what'll happen when that job is tested. Very, very good opening scene. Really like this one.
Yeah. Then we get to hear Mayor Boggs again, yeah. And he's very excited. He was like this a little bit in The Princess, but not as much in The Perfect Christmas Gift, but with this, you know, he's very excitable, and his laugh, I kind of like his laugh. Like, I don't know what animal he's supposed to be. I'm thinking maybe hyena, maybe.
You realize he's a bullfrog. Boggs. Just sound like, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Okay. That could make sense.
I think a bullfrog would have a lot more limitations on what the character could do, but, you know.
Yeah, he maybe have more of a, you think of more of a deep voice, maybe.
Yeah, he's probably not a bullfrog. Anyway.
But yeah, he shares the news that Mr. Rockler is moving to Wildwood, and is going to be living there for 1 to 2 years to oversee the train project.
Yeah.
That will go through the mountain, and also his 11-year-old daughter will be in the class, Tiffany, which this is after The Princess, like episode 4, I think. So we introduce to those characters then. We hear Mr. Rockler's bringing changes to Wildwood.
Oh, right. Right. So that's... Oh, I forgot about that. And we see how rude she is in that beginning episode, right?
Yep.
Why didn't I remember that?
It's been quite a while. But I don't know if I remember them saying that they were going to go through the mountain. I thought he just like upgrading like the train and that kind of stuff and bringing commerce. I'm not sure if they talked about a tunnel through the mountain in that episode. I'd have to go back and listen to that. This might be the first mention of it.
It would make sense that it'd be announced in this episode, because it's announced with his intentions to move to Wildwood. So before, they didn't know that he wanted to move there. Now maybe he has this plan and he's like, oh, well, I want to move to Wildwood so I can oversee this construction, because it's going to happen. It's not like the construction was always going to happen. Then he thought, wouldn't it be a good idea if I actually moved to Wildwood? No, I think they happened at the same time. I might just not know what I'm talking about, but, you know.
So we hear that they move into the whole top floor of the hotel, which is probably the only hotel in Wildwood. They don't have a place to stay because they have so many staff, including Mr. Yusuf. And Tiffany gets like a really big room all to herself, but the news is spreading Wildwood and the kids are really excited. And I like how the narrator says no one, not even Hugh, was late for school that day.
Because I wanted to see this important person.
And we also get a callback to Tiffany's first episode, because Stacy whispers, she looks like a princess, which is a great callback to that episode. And I think she calls her, looks like a princess in that one she mentions.
Yeah. So real quick, we'll get here in a couple seconds, but what kind of an animal is she? Is she a beaver? I assume no.
Who?
Tiffany.
Tiffany?
Like, my only question is she a beaver?
I think there's future episodes that says that she's a cub.
Okay.
But I don't think they say that she's a bear cub.
Well, unless she's a beaver, there's something in this episode that very much makes me uncomfortable. That's the fact that these are animals, and the fact that Ned likes her, that doesn't work if they're not the same animal.
Well,
right?
Well, all the boys seem to be like that.
That's what concerns me even more.
You have like Ned, CJ, and here's the thing that's probably the odd thing about this episode is we hear, I'm guessing Hugh, but it's not the same actor, but I'm pretty certain it's Chris Anthony saying, out of the way, Cyclops. Hugh's the only one that calls CJ Cyclops. So I'm guessing they didn't have the actor for that story. It's like, Hey, Chris, can you do a raspy younger boy's voice?
Yeah, because I instantly picked up on that it was Hugh, but I think I could also tell. I think I thought, oh, if he's gonna say more lines, it's probably not going to be Hugh. So, yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was Hugh.
It's just all the guys clamoring to do something for her, and then all of a sudden, Ned! And he's like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. And then Tiffany announces that the Rucklers will be funding a new library for the town.
Yeah.
And Mayor Boggs is there, too, and he's excited. He goes off to thank her father.
He's like, oh, I think I'm going to go now. And he's like, well, I'm going to go thank her father, and, like, goes to find him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in these first couple scenes, Tiffany doesn't seem that bad, actually. Like, I don't mind this version of Tiffany.
Yeah, but you can still see, you can kind of hear that, you know, the kind of airy, not quite pompous, but very airy, polished kind of tone. Like,
yeah.
Like, prim and proper, I guess you might call it. And we hear also Miss Harbord's excited about the library, too. So it's like maybe her, I don't know, maybe her guard's down a little bit, maybe. So we find out that Tiffany is a trendsetter because the other girls wanted to dress like her and be like her. And then we find out that Tiffany is making Ned do her homework, which is the first indication of something's not right here, because Miss Harbor finds that their book reports are basically the same. Tiffany gives the excuse of, oh, we studied together, and then I have to redo it.
And Ned doesn't say a thing. He's just like, oh.
Yeah, so she talks to him later, and like Ned's still kind of, you know, kind of giggling over himself.
So here's the thing, Austin, you gotta do this. You have to. It's been 10 years in the making. The Swidigal, still walk down Gilead Lane, when the episode Truth and Lies was reviewed, I think it's Truth and Lies.
Hi, this is Future Austin. I just wanted to correct past Michael. The episode that you're talking about from DGL is actually The Cheater. I actually didn't realize that until I was editing this episode.
That was the episode where Tiffany Richter was introduced on that show. And Dave Brown, who was one of the co-hosts, said how he thought there were so many similarities between Tiffany on this show and Tiffany in that show in her one of her introductory scenes. So, Austin, you gotta put the down Gilead Lane scene in here, please. At least part of it.
Which scene is that?
So the scene in which Justin is in the principal's office being asked about the fact that the papers are the same. Because Dave put the scene from this episode in Paws and Tails in the Swidigal. So we gotta close the loop here.
Okay.
Afternoon, Justin. Have a seat, please.
Okay. Hi, Tiffany. What are you doing in here?
Like you don't know.
All right, that's enough, Miss Richter. It appears that there's been a little sharing going on with your English papers. Would either one of you two care to tell me about this?
All I know is that he was in my peer editing group and...
Okay, Tiffany, you already told me this part, and I told you that I don't want any finger-pointing. This is a very serious matter. Perhaps you two thought that since you were in different classes, nobody would notice.
excuse me, Mr. Jacobs, I don't really know what's going on.
When your teachers got together to talk about their selections for the research paper contest, imagine their shock when they found that your two topic sentences were almost identical, your sources and quotes exactly the same. It's pretty clear that only one of you wrote this paper. So what do you have to say for yourselves?
Yay! Okay, but anyway, because there was that similarity between this one and Down Gilead Lane, I was expecting it to be that Tiffany was cheating off of the work by stealing it, but no, it's far more sinister. I like this version a lot better. I liked that episode in Down Gilead Lane, but I like this one because it's more from Tiffany's perspective than it is from Ned's perspective. She's not only cheating, but she's also forcing him to do the work for her, which is a twist I didn't see coming.
And also paying him.
Yeah, that's kind of not great. And she's rough. Like, at the end of that scene, doesn't she say, like, we'll talk at recess? And that's the first indication I got of, oh, something's not right here. And then at recess, he is still on cloud nine, like, oh, yeah, this is totally fine. I'm okay with this because she's a pretty girl and I can do whatever for her. And she's like, look, you weren't supposed to do that. He's like, I changed a couple words. He's like, no, you got to redo the whole thing. Then he starts to push back and sort of start to see that this is the problem. But I find this Tiffany, and I don't have to keep making comparisons to DGL, but I find Tiffany Rockler really realistic in that she is used to getting what she wants because her dad leaves her alone and lets other people take care of her. in this scenario, she also wants to be able to get this grade without doing the work on her own. So going to Ned and saying, hey, do this for me. He's like, okay, sure. And then finding out he did it wrong. Her coming back to him, that should have been a wake-up call to for her for like, okay, I just barely made it out that time. I have to do the work myself now. No, she is too far into the selfishness that she turns it right back around and goes, no, you need to do this again. Make us two separate papers. So that's an interesting character move this early in the episode, and it showed me there's a lot to her character. And we get later on in the episode some more indications of her backstory to where I really like this character. I think she's really interesting.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we will hear from her and her father more in the future.
Yes.
So we hear that the girls from the club visit Tiffany, and it starts okay. Yeah. You know, they're talking about, like, ribbons from France and that kind of
lies.
Stuff.
They're never...
And then she's making fun of another girl, Maria, and then making fun of each other. She mentions Marcia's clumsiness, which we haven't heard about that in a while.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And then Goose finally gets fed up, and she leaves, which good for her.
Yeah, good call. I mean, that's often the way these things work, is that somebody who's good at the art of deception, like Tiffany, will start off saying positive things, then slowly work in things that, yeah, you can get behind this, right? Even though you probably wouldn't agree to this if you were paying attention to what's going on, and then eventually going to just flat-out insults, which is what we get at the end of the episode. So it's a really well-written character. Yeah.
So later on, the next day, she says that the hair ribbon, I guess, that she gave him said it was from her shoebox. Or that came with her shoebox. Like, I don't know if that's a lie or not. The narrator talks about how she got pretty much the whole class under her thumb. She gets to the point where she, you know, makes fun of Marcia, and this time Miss Harbor overhears her.
Yeah.
She cracks down on her. We haven't heard Miss Harbor this stern before.
Oh, it gets worse.
Yeah, Tiffany doesn't, she doesn't, like, you know, how dare you get after me? She, you know, she goes into this, you know, really sweet, and it's like, I am very sorry, Marcia, whatever, and
no,
then leaves it at that.
No, you're not. There's no way.
Yeah, but... I don't know, maybe Ned on his own just got sick of doing it. I mean, he noticed how she was treating his friends, but Ned comes clean, tells Miss Harbor what's going on.
With Ned, he's initially infatuated and like, oh, this is great, and then all of a sudden it clicks. I'm imagining it just clicks from like, what am I doing? This is dumb. She's not reciprocating, obviously. She's also not being nice about it. She's also not doing great things. I have everything to gain by turning her in and nothing to lose, so eh. And then takes everything to Miss Harbor because he's a good guy. He's also Eric Basil. So, you know, he's got that going for him. But yeah, very proud of Ned on what he did there.
Yeah. And I love the dialogue with the back and forth between Tiffany and Miss Harbor. Talking about she finally gets Tiffany to admit, you know, to not doing it. And then Tiffany, you know, kind of bargains. Like, she's probably used to this kind of thing, you know, trying to keep the upper hand. Like, I'll do the paper over or something like that.
Yeah, something even her father mentions. Like, I thought when that scene came up later that, oh, Tiffany was just doing something that her father had told her to do. Maybe, maybe not. I think she's just done this before and conditioned her family to or her dad to believe that.
Oh, yeah, she's probably definitely done this before.
Oh, yeah.
She
yeah.
talks about it later. But, yeah, she finally gets to the point, you know, where she's... going to have a parent-teacher conference with her dad, and she's like, oh, Mr. Yusuf handles my affairs. Like, my dad's too busy, and she keeps pressing on that. And then finally, she kind of pushes Miss Harbor to a point like, okay, that's it. That's no more disrespect, no more of this willful behavior.
You get the day off.
And she expels her or, like, just sends her home for the day, and yeah.
So, I was a little concerned about this. I understand Miss Harbor wanting to speak with her father. However, I can also completely understand if her father is just legitimately that busy. Like, I'm actually friends with my congressman, which is pretty cool. He lives not too far away from my house. So I know if he's away in Washington, D.C., you're not getting a parent-teacher conference with him and his kids. That's just not happening because he's gone. He's not there. So with Mr. Yusuf... like, this family does have, like, there's the mom in the family, and then there are some other people who can help take care of the kids.
Well, the mom's not there.
I know. I'm saying, like, for my congressman.
Oh, okay.
And, like, for him. So, like, but in this one, obviously, yeah, the mom's not there. So, Ms. Harbor pushing back against Mr. Yusuf, from experience and from me thinking, well, I don't know if that would actually be realistic, when she says, no, it has to be your father, that concerned me a little. Does it really have to be? Is it Ms. Harbor's prerogative to make sure that Tiffany is getting that attention from her dad? I admire her for standing up to Mr. Rockler and doing it later. I just don't know that it was her prerogative to do it. I don't know if it's her business. Does that make sense?
Well, here's the thing. This, you know, Wildwood is a very small town. People, pretty much everybody knows each other. And she may not be used to how, you know, people like that with, you know, a lot of business, that kind of stuff is there. But the thing is, he's not like traveling the world and never hardly in Wildwood. He's still there in Wildwood. He's still getting kind of settled in to a certain extent. And again, just a few minutes of his time wouldn't take that long. So I can understand that. And yeah. Again, with it being a small town, and Miss Harbor, she loves kids.
Right.
She is so, you know, like how she did with for Stacy. She did a lot to make sure that she could see that, you know, she had talents that she didn't know she had.
You need to use your abilities. No, sorry.
No, let's not go there. So, yeah, but her heart's in the right place. I think she was right in doing that. Again, circumstances, I can see that probably being the case. Like, if it was just, like, the disrespect earlier about, like, to Marcia, and maybe if Tiffany hadn't gone so far in how she did things, then maybe Mr. Yusuf might have been enough to talk to. Miss Harbor sees something that, yeah, this girl's really hurting, and it may be something more deeper than just, you know, being a rich girl.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, depending on who the dad's registered with the school to be the one who handles her affairs, if it actually is Mr. Yusuf or if it is him, and again, this is like late 1800s, early 1900s era, right, for these animals. Yeah, so maybe it would be more like that. I'm just thinking, I don't know if that would fly today to demand your father needs to come in here. As well-intentioned as that might be, there just might be a scenario where that cannot happen. Or that won't happen based on the dealings of the family or how the family works. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, the scenario, too, did it remind you at all of Katrina and a book by its cover?
Oh, not really. Because Katrina backed down at first and then ran up and said, no, we're not doing this. You go back there and you're going to apologize and we're going to study. So that was a lot more forceful. I think I don't know how I feel about Katrina in that episode. I think Ms. Harbor just stays, no, this is the way things are. You're going to do this. And reaching out to the dad was more of the way this episode went rather than trying to reach out to the student. So I see what you're going for, but I didn't really see that parallel.
So do you think she still was in the right for expelling her or, like, dismissing her for the day?
Yeah. You don't take that. You don't take disrespect. She is within her ability to do that as a teacher, and I think she is, or Principal Boggs, as he might be in this episode, but yeah, Mayor Boggs, doesn't indicate you were wrong in your abilities as a teacher to do this. It was just, how dare you do that to Tiffany Rockler was the way he was putting it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if she's allowed to do it, do it. Don't take disrespect.
Yeah. Mayor Boggs, yeah. Don't like him. Like, I can understand him. Like, he's trying to smooth things over. He's trying to do, like, bend over backwards and do somersaults for this big shot guy. But again, he's going too far. And, like, he brings up, you know, how dare you send her home? Like, that wasn't the problem. It wasn't, you know, how dare you get Mr. Rocker involved and that kind of stuff. I mean, he had a problem with that, but that wasn't the thing he brought up. Like, it was more like, oh, just think of the image. Like, yeah, that's the only thing you're thinking of, mister.
Now, I think the narrator said something about, like, Ms. Harbor tried to make it so that he didn't seem upset, but inside she was really upset. Or I forget what the exact line is, but I was thinking, she really sounded not exactly upset, but that was the roughest we've seen her with Tiffany. And so I thought, well, yeah, she's clearly there's something going on. But even in all of her interactions in this episode, she handles herself really, really well, except I think when she does start to get personal at the parent-teacher conference. I think that should have been after the questions about, well, after her statements about, well, I am the teacher and she was cheating. It's not a matter of her respecting me, I think is what she should have said. It's not a matter of her respecting me and me, like, instilling that in her. It's about what you as a parent have done for your child. I think she should have covered that a little bit more first before instantly going to, hey, you need to spend more time with your child and doing all these things and stuff. But still, I think she was definitely within her right to say that. It just might have been a smarter idea if she didn't want to get fired immediately, which is kind of almost what happened.
Another thing that narrator does bring up, and we hear about this in To Have and Give Not, her first introduction, where She has a hard time speaking to adults. She's great with kids, but she's very shy and backward kind of with adults. You kind of see that with Mayor Boggs. Like, Mayor Boggs kind of doesn't let her speak very much.
Right, right.
In any of the scenes, pretty much. So, you know, it took a lot of effort, a lot of energy to try to, you know, say those things with it. So, again, if you're not used to speaking to certain people, then it can be difficult in, you know, how you come across in some cases. Yeah. Like, how you come across with kids is going to be different than how you come across with adults.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Good point.
But yeah, the main reason things really turned out bad is because Mayor Boggs was there. I don't think he should have been there. Like, he is the head of the school board, but if you're not going to have the entire school board there, then yeah, that's not the greatest thing. Because I think if Mayor Boggs was not in that meeting, then I think both Mr. Rockler and Ms. Harbor would have a very respectful, civil conversation. But Mayor Boggs keeps instigating stuff and keeps, like, needling her about these things. I think that was the reason. Like, in his, you know, kind of saying, you're going to be fired or whatever. And Mr. Rocker doesn't, he's upset.
He doesn't have the ability for that.
He's really upset.
He doesn't have the ability to do that. Which is, it's, yeah.
Well, head of the school board.
Oh, Mr. Rockler?
No, I was talking about Mayor Boggs is head of the school board.
I guess,
and that
yeah.
he is going to be recommending that they get a new teacher.
Yeah, he does. But
so he kind of fires her, kind of not. But still, I think he's the main instigator here. I think Mayor Boggs not there. I think that Mr. Rockler and Ms. Harper probably could have come to terms. Like, I don't think he probably would have believed everything until he saw what happened later. But I think they would have had a lot better... He would have left that meeting a lot better, I think, than if Mayor Boggs hadn't been there.
That's a good point. I still think he got really worked up. And in the beginning, it seemed like he was going to the conclusion of, wow, can you not handle my daughter? And if we got a scenario where it was just Mr. Rockler and Ms. Harper, I think we could have seen a similar outcome where it's even a more poignant turnaround for Mr. Rockler at the end, where he realizes, yeah, I was wrong in talking to you that way. It wasn't just Mayor Boggs, because at this point, Mayor Boggs comes across really, really bad. And I, like, props to Ms. Harbor for not getting super frustrated and storming angrily out of that room. That was she was taking it really, really well. And to hear that she cried... Was it she cried all night?
Yeah, she cried and had a hard time sleeping.
Yeah,
and...
that's really rough. So that's something I need to practice better, meekness in those situations, but also confidence in what I know. And that's something she exemplified really well. So nice job on David Carl for bringing that out in her character. But also, this episode had me really worked up about the fact that it seems like Wildwood is turning into this a system, at least the school, and it seems like it might stretch even farther, to where a small group of people exercise their own selfish interests and can exercise their own selfish interests over the well-meaning citizens. And it doesn't go that way, because Mr. Rockler has a change of heart after he hears his daughter. But especially with what his daughter was saying of, I can get any teacher fired that I want, and that no teacher's going to want to stand up to me after that. To hear that, if Mr. Rockler was more on his daughter's side than on the side of justice, on the side of right and wrong, then I could see the destruction of Wildwood from that. That's a pretty dark scenario.
Well, yeah, I don't think that, because it is a small town. I think this is like the only like elementary school. I don't think they do high school there. I'm not even sure if they do high school. I don't think we ever hear a high school in Wildwood, if I'm not mistaken. I know like back like some schools only went up to like 8th grade, I think, or 7th grade or something like that.
Yeah, well, because a lot of people had to go back home and help on the farm.
Yeah. Again, I think the only reason why it got so toxic with Mayor Boggs, with the school board and that kind of stuff, was because of them trying to bend over backwards for Mr. Rockler. I don't think, because the school itself, Ms. Harper's a great teacher, I don't think she would still be there if it wasn't a good situation beforehand.
Right, right.
Anyway, so Mr. Rockler leaves, and narrator talks about that he's furious, but then he goes to the hotel, goes to talk to Tiffany, and he overhears her bragging to some other friends about how she's gotten other people fired and or people try to, you know, bend over backwards to please her and all that. And he overhears it. And again, it's great comeuppance for Tiffany.
Yes.
It's great comeuppance. And it's also, you know, a change of Mr. Rockler's character and humanizing him, I guess, a little bit more. It kind of breaks a little bit with it getting kind of emotional. Like he said, like, ever since Mother left, I have spoiled you. And, like, you can feel his voice kind of breaking. Like, he didn't know or he didn't really think much about this. And Tiffany, like, she breaks down crying, too.
Yeah, and that's a good line, the since Mother left, I've spoiled you. It's a great line because it fills in some of the backstory in a way that is actually meaningful to the context of the conversation, so it doesn't sound like exposition, and it works well emotionally. That was a very long-winded way to say it's a good line. But overall, I love that interaction, especially because when Tiffany breaks down crying, I don't know if she's being selfish or she's actually having a change of heart, but it seems like it might be a little bit of both. Because the next, when he leaves, she's like, no, father, please, I'm sorry. I'm like, you're sorry about what? What are you going to do? You haven't learned anything here yet. All that you've learned is that your father's willing to stand up to you now. So I don't even know if Tiffany's had a change of heart. She says later on she's going to be a model student, but that has yet to be seen. I want to see where this goes. But at least Mr. Rockler, great job on his part for seeing that. And I love the music, love the way this whole scene is paced. It's really good.
Yeah. And then we find out where Miss Harper's getting ready to say goodbye to her students. And I love the scene where the narrator talks about, you know, how she was wanting to watch the kids grow up. And you hear the Paws and Tails theme go in there right there. Just kind of a melancholy kind of feeling to it. And I love that. And while she's talking, Mr. Rockler comes in with Tiffany.
I guess Mr. Rockler's fine, but then Mayor Boggs just barges in, and that's like, why are you here again? He completely spoils that they're getting rid of her, which is also extremely insensitive.
Yeah, and the kids all gasp.
Yeah. Like, dude, have some respect for your kids. Please.
Yeah. But thankfully, Mr. Rockler, you know, I don't know if Tiffany was doing it. I don't think she's doing it all on her own. He kind of makes her apologize, so we don't know for certain if she's sincere or not with that. And then, you know, he kind of gets Mayor Boggs out of the idea, like, oh, no, Miss Harbor's still going to be the teacher. Like, he's not mean about it. He's diplomatic about it.
Yes.
But he's not at the point, like, oh, you'll do this or else kind of thing. He seems like a nice enough person in this episode that, yeah, things are going to be better. He's still going to fund the library. He apologizes to Miss Harbor. And it all ends with, you know, Miss Harbor going back to what she loves, teaching.
Yeah, at the beginning of the episode, I couldn't really tell who the main character was going to be. I thought it was going to be Goose, maybe Ned. I thought it was going to be Ned from that clip from the slow walk. But now, going back and re-listening to it for the review, I could see that it was Miss Harper.
Yes.
And it's a really sneaky plot. But I loved it. Thought it was really well constructed.
Yeah, like, it took me a while to realize this episode really is Miss Harper's story.
Yeah, it's very clever. Very clever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great way of, we've heard her, I think, three times in an episode. One time it's like a clip in The Princess from a previous episode. But this episode just kind of strengthens her character. We get to know her more. We will see her more in the future and get a little more of her backstory. And yeah, like I told you before, Miss Harbor, she's my favorite teacher character in audio drama.
Okay, well, I will keep listening, see if she's better than Mrs. Collins. I mean, she's already better than Mrs. Collins, but we'll see.
So this episode actually is pretty similar to your favorite episode, Standing Alone, which that episode too deals with the adults a lot more of a serious tone to it. So I was wondering, do you think this episode is as good as that episode, or do you think it's different?
I was thinking about that. I think it's really close. I don't think it's as good. I need a little while longer to figure out why exactly. I still think Standing Alone is my favorite overall, because the themes in that and the character development and the plot as well, even though the plot was kind of predictable, I loved the theme of that one and like the fact that it focused on the adults. This episode is also really, really good. I think I would need to see more of Tiffany's character in order to appreciate her a little bit more as a character. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out a reason why. But yeah, I will consider that. Still, loved it.
I think it's one of the best episodes. Actually, I think one of the best episodes we've reviewed in a while.
Yeah.
I like this, and since we've already heard it twice, you can see that Paws and Tails isn't afraid to make the adults the main characters. Not just the kids, not just a kids' show. They can take the adults in a way and make them the main character. And we'll see several episodes like this in the future.
Black Tubes?
A comment.
I still have no idea what those are. So I'm so confused.
You will find out. But yeah, we will have episodes with the main characters as the adults and not the club being the main focus in the future. And I think some of those cases is when Paws and Tails is at its best.
All right. Looking forward to that.
All right. Well, that was so much fun to talk about those episodes.
Yeah.
And quick sneak peek at what's coming up next. We'll be reviewing, hopefully sometime in the future, episode 19, Stacey's Dilemma. And Episode 20 is Blinded by the Sight. And one of those episodes is that really great mystery I keep talking about.
Interesting. Okay. What about a sneak peek at what's coming up on Normal Odyssey Geek? You have any of that?
Well, it's not fully confirmed yet, but I have two new guest hosts.
What?
On the Odyssey portion of Odyssey Geek coming up. And another top numbered list about a certain topic. Hopefully we'll be able to record that soon in the future, but yeah, we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, a lot of great stuff coming up. I'm looking forward to all of it. Thanks for having me, Austin.
Yeah, thanks, Michael, and thank you all for listening.
Goodbye!